أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا وحبيب قلوبنا وشفيع نفوسنا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين، واللعن الدائم على أعدائهم أجمعين. So we're moving towards the 10th day. Every day that passes, you think that you won't get there, but slowly it happens. Every year you feel like it's not going to happen. This year inshallah it won't happen, but we move closer and closer. What went wrong with this ummah that we had Ashura, and what happened on Ashura? We were talking about that tree, that cursed tree of Bani Umayyah. We covered four steps. Step number one was the seed of the of Saqifa. Number two was the prohibition of Hadith. Number three was Muawiyah coming to power for the first time and Bani Umayyah being surprised, Abu Sufyan being surprised that, wow, they're giving us power. During Abu Bakr and Umar's time, Yazid bin Abi Sufyan and Muawiyah bin Abi Sufyan coming to power, but a limited power. Then the fourth step was the Saqifa, the second Saqifa, where Uthman was chosen, and officially Khilafa and all power was given to Bani Umayyah. And I touched on a little bit on Uthman and the killing of Uthman, his assassination yesterday, and then we're going to open that up today. Now, as I've been saying again and again, we are not doing Imam Ali alayhi salam's history. We are doing the history of Bani Umayyah. But since its roots go back all the way till Saqifa and during Umar's time and Abu Bakr's time and Uthman's time, we have no choice but to rewind, go back to them, but look at it from that perspective. And we've also kind of, you could say that the discussion has transformed from a purely Shia approach and understanding to Shia / Sunni. This wasn't planned at the beginning, but I thought it was good. It would be good, since we had good attendance, to educate the brothers and sisters a little more on how the other schools of thought sometimes look at things. Why? So that we understand how they think, so that we can get better dialogue going and don't have unnecessary tension sometimes. Right? How to answer some of the questions that are posed to us, and for us to also pose some questions to them. And inshallah, they are also as understanding. It is not always that the way their extreme ones are, the normal, moderate ones, they are more understanding. They're willing to sit down, listen, hear you out. Especially in countries like this, where, you know, people have gotten used to dialogue and used to tolerance. Of course, unfortunately, sometimes this tolerance isn't always there, even between races, the religions, but nonetheless, it's a slogan that's out there. I want to open up Uthman, the time of Uthman a little bit, and those last days when Uthman is assassinated. Why? Because this is something that's used by Muawiyah in the future. Nothing would have gone down if this hadn't happened. They even have hadith. Our Sunni brothers and sisters have hadith from the Prophet, that a king or a ruler of you will be killed. And as a matter of fact, it's in Nahjul Balagha too, if I'm not mistaken, I'll read it now. That there will, someone will be killed, that after him, everything is going to go down. And that's Uthman. Ali ibn Abi Talib, he tells Uthman. Now I want you to bear with me. This is about 2-3 paragraphs of Nahjul Balagha I want to read to you. But the reason I want to read it to you is to show how Amir al-Mu'mineen was close to Uthman, trying to make sure that stuff doesn't go down, because he knows that the Muslim Ummah, if this happens to Uthman, this will be used as an excuse. This will be the beginning of a fall for the Muslim Ummah. The Muslim Ummah was coming down slowly, but this will take a snowball effect, and things will just go crazy after that. So he says in Sermon 164, he's with Uthman and he's speaking to Uthman, trying to advise him, trying to knock some sense into the fact that you better be careful. Why? Because you're not running the show. People around you are running the show. Be very careful. The other Bani Umayyah around you, they're the ones who have the reins of the hukuma in their hands. He says, this is when people have come from Egypt and other places, Kufa, other places, and they want to revolt against Uthman. I said why yesterday. Those five reasons, those main five reasons that we listed yesterday, of why people were fed up with Uthman. This is the first time a revolution wants to take place after the Prophet within the Muslim Ummah. That's how bad the situation is. Imam Ali says, the people are behind me and they have made me an ambassador between you and themselves. But by Allah, I do not know what to say to you. This is Sermon 164. I don't know what to tell you. I mean, you've messed up too much. And when I'm speaking like this, brothers, once again, our Sunnis, Shaykhs, some of them speak like this. Sunni Shaykhs from our brothers of the Sunni school, they're speaking. Okay? They will tell you that this is right. But, radiyallahu an still. So we still have that Adalat al-Sahaba issue on the side, right? But this is the reality. The Wahhabis, though, they don't want to accept this. And I'll give you some examples in the future. It's interesting. They're behind me. They've sent me to you because they can't talk to you. I'm the in-between person. Only Imam Ali could have stopped this bloodshed. And he did. And he did. But Uthman messed up again. We'll get to that. I don't know what to say to you. I know nothing in this matter which you do not know. Everything that you're supposed to know about Islam, I know. Come on. About how to manage the Baytul Mal, about the Sahaba, how you're supposed to treat them, all of these things that you've made mistakes about. Nor can I lead you to any matter of which you are not aware. You know everything. You just have to act on it. You certainly know what we know. We have not come to know anything before you which we could tell you. Nor did we learn anything in secret which we should convey to you. There's nothing that you don't know that I need to tell you. In other words, it's all a matter of action. Making the right decisions. Making the right decisions with the people around you. Regarding them. Replacing them. You have seen as we have seen, and you have heard as we have heard. You sat in the company of the Prophet of Allah, sallallahu alaihi wa sallam, as we did. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad. Ibn Abi Quhafa, which is Abu Bakr, and Ibn al-Khattab, Umar, were no more responsible for acting righteously than you, since you are nearer than both of them to the Prophet of Allah through kinship, and you also hold relationship to him by marriage, which they do not hold. Yes? The Prophet is his father-in-law. Then fear Allah in your own self, for by Allah you are not being shown anything as if you are blind, or being apprised of anything as if you are ignorant. The ways are clear, while the banners of faith are fixed and standing. You see them. You know which way you have to go. The signs are there. You should know that among the creatures of Allah, the most distinguished person before Allah is the just Imam. In other words, you're not being just. If you're not just, hukuma falls. Government falls. So he stands before Allah, this just Imam, and is guided by Allah and guides others and so on. He goes on and on. Let's go to the end. That the Prophet said, certainly, the worst man before Allah is the oppressive Imam who has gone astray and through whom others go astray. He destroys the accepted Sunnah, revives the abandoned innovations and bid'ah. I heard the Messenger of Allah saying, on the Day of Judgment, the oppressive Imam will be brought without anyone to support him or anyone to advance excuses on his behalf, bring excuses for him. And then he will be thrown into hell, where he will rotate as the handmill rotates. Then eventually he will be confined to its hollow. So Imam Ali is warning him of all of this. You're ruining your akhirah. You're ruining your dunya. Now this part, of course, the Wahhabis will not accept. Because the akhirah is always set for at least the 10 that were granted paradise for sure. So this part for sure they won't accept. And this last paragraph is important. I swear to you by Allah that you should not be that imam of the people who will be killed. Because it has been said that an imam of this people will be killed, after which killing and fighting will be made open for them till the Day of Judgment. So in a way, Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam is letting us know that today, if there's bloodshed because of sectarianism, because of misunderstanding, because of disunity and all of that, in a way it goes back to this, the fact that there was an imam or a khalifa who didn't do what he was supposed to do and was eventually killed. And it was the first case of such a thing happening, and the Muslim Ummah divided from there. He says, if this has been said, meaning the Prophet has said this, that an imam will be killed after that assassination, after that killing, lots of killing and bloodshed will happen. And he will confuse their matters, this imam that will be killed, he will confuse their matters and spread troubles over them. As a result, they will not discern truth from wrong. They will oscillate like waves and would be utterly misled. You should not behave, and this last sentence is very, very important, and it shows the key problem. You should not behave as the carrying beast. In other words, the ride. Don't be the ride of some other people. Who? Like who? As the carrying beast for Marwan, so that he may drag you to and fro whichever way he desires. Uthman, once again, I'm just echoing what is said by some, not all, but some of the Ahlus Sunnah, of their shuyukh, they would say, yes, he was weak. He didn't have as much resolve. He wasn't as decisive as the ones before him, like Umar. What happens? Family members come, relatives come, he starts putting them in charge, putting them in power, and he's influenced by them. This Amir al-Mu'mineen, he's coming to Uthman and trying to make sure that this doesn't happen, trying to help out Uthman. And Uthman has actually asked him to help. Ali ibn Abi Talib, he's helping out. He tried, and it worked. Imam Ali was able to reconcile the revolutionaries that had come. Them and Uthman, they were able to come to an agreement, and things are going good. Imam Ali tells him, listen, as long as you make sure you're listening to me, things are going to go right again. Make sure you listen to everything I say, Uthman. Yes, fine. But some mistakes are made again. After this is over, this little peace treaty is signed, he says some things again that gets everyone going crazy. Once again, they're able to, fix it up somehow. But this is where the problem happens. And this is where Marwan, you can tell that his malice was all over the place. One of the places is here. They say these people are going back now to their homes in different cities, Kufa, as I said, Egypt, other places. On the way, they see one of his messengers, Uthman's messengers, or some say his servant. And they feel like, okay, what is he doing outside the city, along the way, on the way to our cities? What is he doing? So they go search him, only to find a letter in there, rolled up somewhere and secretly put somewhere in his belongings. What is in that letter? That when you receive this letter and the people come back from Medina, those who had come and they were objecting to the rulership of Uthman, make sure that you kill all of them. Signed and sealed by the seal of Uthman. So they take this and go back. They go back to Medina again. And you feel sorry for Ali ibn Abi Talib. He thought it's over. Look, they're coming back again. Okay, what happened this time? What happened this time? They say, what are we supposed to do? They go to Imam Ali. They don't go to Uthman. They go to Imam Ali. They say, tell us what to do now. You look at this letter. Uthman, did you do this? He says, no, by Allah, I didn't. He swears, I didn't. The very, very strong guess that, and now here the Shia ulama say this. They say, our strong guess is it's true. He wasn't lying. He had not sealed this letter. But his seal is with someone else, and that person had left it with Marwan. Do the math. Do the math. This Marwan that Sahih Muslim says he would go on the minbar and curse Imam Ali alayhi salam on the minbar. This is what it is. Marwan bin Hakam. But we can't talk bad about him in front of everybody. Why? Because he's a Sahabi. Marwan bin Hakam, a person that our Sunni brothers and sisters, their ulama, some of them have problems with him. When they have problems, they say, oh, they're Shia too. Oh, he's Sunni, come on. He's our friend, he's not from our school of thought. No, he's Shia. Why? Because he spoke against Marwan bin Hakam. He spoke against Abdullah bin Zubayr. I'm going to give examples of these and I'll explain them. Here, brothers and sisters, let's open a huge parenthesis. I want to talk about something. Now, yesterday and the day before, I was explaining in detail this six-person council, right? And then people were coming after telling me, oh, we had never heard of this. Yes, that's why I spoke about it in detail, because I was sure that we haven't heard about it. You know why? Because I'm just like you guys. I grew up here too, and when we were growing up, we haven't heard about these things before. These are things we have to hear about. Going to high school, going to middle school, whatever. This six-person council, it's changed history of Islam. What else do we have? This isn't as important, but I want you guys to be on the same page. We know what's going on when some people say this to us. And that is the story of Abdullah bin Saba'. This is a parenthesis, inshallah, I'll get to close it sometime down the road. Abdullah bin Saba'. Who is he? How many of us have heard of Abdullah bin Saba'? Abdullah bin Saba' usually is preceded by the word myth. The myth of Abdullah bin Saba'. The Shia will say it like that. And fair. Ahlus Sunnah will also say it like that, as I've seen them say it. The fair ones, they will also say it like that. What is this all about? Because of that whole story of Adalat al-Sahaba, I want to show you how this shows itself everywhere. This concept of the righteousness and the piety of Sahaba no matter what. We believe that some of the Sahaba were involved in the revolt against Uthman. Some were silent, didn't help. Some were even involved and actually went into this home. One of them being that person that I mentioned a few days ago, bin Hamiq al-Khuzai, and others. A few others, four or five maybe of them. Now, here, they can't accept this. They can't accept because Adalat al-Sahaba. For sure, Sahaba wouldn't do this. So we have to exonerate them. What do we say? Here we have a story, Abdullah bin Saba. Then what went wrong if Medina is full of Sahabis and still Uthman is killed? These Sahaba that are of such a high status, they're not able to get in the way of things. Well, first of all, the Wahhabis now here. You see how I keep putting a difference between Wahhabis and our brothers of Ahlul Sunnah? Here the Wahhabis will tell you that, oh, it was Hajj time, everyone had gone for Hajj. And Medina was empty. That's why a couple hundred people, maybe at most 1,000 people, were able to take over all of Medina. And overthrow Uthman and kill him and put a new Khalifa there and go back to their homes, which was like hundreds and thousands of miles away maybe. Medina all the way to Egypt. All to fix this problem of Sahaba. But no, we don't believe it in like that. And to fix it now, they say, all right, when this group came, their head was a person by the name of Abdullah bin Saba. Where'd you get this from? Oh, Tariq al-Tabari. The only source is Tariq al-Tabari, where he says the person came. He was a Jew before. And this is where they say the ones who are our enemies, they tell us that Shia are Jews. In essence, they're Jews. Why? Because their master was Abdullah bin Saba. He's the one who even made the Shia religion, let's call it. Not denomination of Islam, it's a religion. Abdullah bin Saba, a person that no one has ever heard of. No one knows his story. All of a sudden, you see him, he shows up, and now he comes and he's able to get into the heads of everybody. All of these Sahabi that are here are tricked and fooled or whatever, they're not there, whatever it was, the reason for it, and he's able to overthrow and go back, and he's gone again. Where'd he go? We don't know. Now, in Tabari, I want you to remember just this, because it came to my help too, and my rescue, and I'll tell you why. Just this one thing I want you to remember, brothers and sisters, that this story only is found in Tabari. And other historians who have related it because he related it. In his history book, Tabari, okay? The problem with this story is that there is a person in the chain, and alhamdulillah, Tabari brings his chain of narrators in his history book. In that chain of narrators, there's a person by the name of Saif bin Umar. Okay? I don't want you to remember the name. I just want you to remember the fact that there is a Kazab in this chain of narrators. Sometimes there's a person that you don't know who he is in the chain of narrators. Sometimes you know this person is a liar, finish. Not only that, now these are all people of Ahlul Sunnah now that are saying this. The ones that say he's kadhab. They say he's kadhab. They're from the Sunni school. He's a liar. Ja'al al hadith. He fabricates hadith. Not only that, he's uttuhima bizzandaqa. He has been said to be a zindiq. That means a non-Muslim even, like, doesn't even believe. This is the person in the chain of narrators in the story that has only been mentioned in one place. But what do they do? There's a movie, a series by the name of Al-Hasan wal-Husayn that they made. This series is a movie that misrepresents Imam Hassan, misrepresents Imam Hussein, distorts everything about history. They've made it to counter us. We make movies too, right? They're also making movies. In that movie, it shows Abdullah bin Sabah coming. He's all over the place. I don't know how, where they got all this script from. Where did you make this all up from? Because we only have one story about him and that's it. Abdullah bin Sabah. Why? You make up something so that you can fix a lot of things up here. Now that Abdullah bin Sabah is a person, and then they go on and on. He's the one who brought tashayyu to life. He's the one who made tashayyu and Shiism. He's the one who did ghuluv and exaggerated about Imam Ali and took him up to the extent of a deity, to the extent that Imam Ali wanted to kill him, and so on. And that's where Shia came comes into play, and that's where Saba'iyya comes into play. And oh my God, so much stuff that comes out of a person that we don't even know if he existed or not. So that one point, what are we going to say from now on? It's one story in Tabari, and that's in a chain. The chain is crazy off. Now it's interesting. Remember, I've been talking about my stories in Hajj this year, alhamdulillah. Recite salawat, so I tell you another one. So as I've been saying, I had a little buddy there, okay, and I'm kidding. He wasn't my buddy. He's one of those guys who guards the baqi so that no one commits shirk. Oh my God. Okay. So we sat down. We're talking. All of a sudden, he busted out with what? Abdullah bin Sabah. Now he didn't know I'm from Qom and stuff. He just thought I'm a normal person. And I'm a normal person. I'm a humble servant. And some people say you're either a normal person or you're a sheikh. So he comes out with Abdullah bin Sabah, and he wants to, like, you know, use that now. Right away, I remembered this. I had read it somewhere or seen it somewhere, whatever. I said, listen, man, you guys, you yourselves who taught us about chains of narrators, you're the ones who are telling us that he's kazzab, he's a liar. Wadda' al-hadith, he fabricates hadith. And so I was getting ready to get a response from him and start up the argument and everything, and then he just closed his mouth. And then, like, he started talking about the weather or something. He started talking about something else. So I'm thinking, like, if you know this, because he never has kept quiet. This is like the one time he kept quiet. And he just went on to some other subject. It was interesting. Well, if you know that there's a problem in this, then why do you talk about it? Our great ulama have destroyed this story. To the extent that in academic circles, Islamic academic circles, if someone talks about Abdullah bin Sabah, he's laughed at. It's interesting how some people are still believing in it. And actually, I did a search today and I saw, wow, they are all talking about it still. Yeah, they don't listen. Some of these Wahhabis. For example, Sayyid Murtada al-Askari, rahmatullah alayhi, he passed away maybe 10 years ago. He's one of the greatest that we had, contemporary. He has 2 or 3 volume book on this, Abdullah bin Sabah, if I remember correctly. Nicely, he has destroyed it. Boom, explosion, finish, done. Nothing left of that. I mean, it's not that hard if it's the chain of narratives is like that and it's only one story. But no, they're still talking about it. So we're going to remember that, inshallah. If that ever comes up, parentheses, closed. Abdullah bin Sabah, if they ever tell you, oh, you guys are Jews and stuff, you came from Jewish background, it's because of this. Now, Saif bin Umar, he has other lies too elsewhere. I don't know if we'll get to those. Okay, now, moving on. Imam Ali alayhi salam is helping out. He's helping out, but it's not fair. You know why? Because whenever Amir al-Mu'mineen goes out of his way, people take advantage of it. They lie about him. They hide things about him. Let me give you a couple examples. In the past, Imam Ali had to do all the dirty work for the Prophet when it came to the battles and the bloodshed and all of that, as I said before, right? Now, it's okay, let him do that. And we're going to talk about it. And everyone's going to talk about it, alhamdulillah. But what hurts is this part. His valor and courage shows that how much iman he has. Now, others in the battlefield who would run away, or who wouldn't get involved, or who would stand in the back and provide counsel to the Prophet in the battles all the time. When we ask, why didn't they get involved that much? Why didn't they shed some blood in the battlefield? Here they will tell you, oh, he had a soft heart. And he just couldn't. That shows how of a great person he was. And they keep talking about it so much that Imam Ali, alayhi salam, what he did wasn't as valuable as what they did in the when it comes to the battlefield even. Through their soft hearts, they got closer to Allah than Ali ibn Abi Talib, who had to keep killing people who were trying to kill the Prophet. We don't hear that many reports about some of the companions, not all of them, of course. Some of the companions, they were involved. Talha, Zubair, Sa'd bin Abi Waqqas, they were fighters. Khalid bin Walid, you could say maybe he was a fighter, although most of his fighting for Islam happened after the Prophet passed away, you could say. But he did fighting before too. So the point is that it's not fair to Ali ibn Abi Talib, but Ali ibn Abi Talib is used to this. He's used to this. He doesn't care. He's going to do it for Allah anyway. Another thing that hurts, it's not fair, is that Ali ibn Abi Talib, when did he become Muslim? Before or after Bulugh? Well, usually they tell you he's before Bulugh. Before he became an adult Islamically, he embraced Islam. So we're happy that our Imam was the first to embrace Islam. Chronologically, he was the first. But it doesn't count. Why? Because he wasn't an adult yet. The Islam of an adult counts. So he's not the first man to or male to embrace Islam. Someone else was the first male to embrace Islam. It's not fair. If being an adult is what counts, then let me ask a question. This same Marwan bin Hakam that everyone's so much in love with, when did he meet the Prophet that you consider him a Sahabi? When did he meet the Prophet? When was he born? He was born around 1 or 2 or maybe 4 after Hijrah. When did the Prophet pass away? 10th after Hijrah. That means how old was he when the Prophet passed away? At most, let's say 10 years old. How come his suhbah, his companionship counts, although he's not an adult yet? And then all of a sudden he's a Sahabi. And now everything he does is justified. But Amir al-Mu'mineen isn't justified. It's not fair. Abdullah bin Zubayr, Sahabiyun Jalil. A great Sahabi. When was he born? Same time, maybe. Maybe he was like 10, 8, 9 years old when the Prophet passed away. How can you call him a Sahabi? Ibn Abbas, which we also revere. Ibn Abbas also, he was like 12, 13 years old when the Prophet passed away. Something in that neighborhood. So you see, it's not fair. When Amir al-Mu'mineen's turn comes, all of a sudden, there's not that much value in it. But when it's others, no, there's a lot of value. Amir al-Mu'mineen has spoiled us. Because everything he's done is so good, we get used to it. Sometimes you don't have a good a report card, right? You got all C's and D's, and then an A will really stand out. But then when you got all A's, it doesn't stand out. And that's where Imam Ali's help towards Uthman doesn't count either. I said all of that to get to here. Ali ibn Abi Talib went out of his way. Even when they cut off water from Uthman's palace, Ali ibn Abi Talib went out of his way. He got water in there somehow to help. When the going had gotten very tough, he still was there to help out. But none of this is seen. What does Muawiyah do? Muawiyah, for 1 year, they say he was telling the people of Sham that Ali ibn Abi Talib killed Uthman. You see, this is where the skill comes in that I was talking about. Till here, it was luck. From here on, it's skill. He tells the people for a year that Ali ibn Abi Talib is the one who killed Uthman. And he also does something very cool. I mean, this man was smart. What did he do? His sister, Ummul Mu'mineen, Umm Habiba, wife of the Prophet. Remember, I don't know, those of you who were here the first or second night, I said Umm Habiba, she was a good wife of the Prophet until she messed up later. This is what I was talking about. Umm Habiba, they say, sends the fingers of the wife of Uthman that had been cut off when she was trying to protect Uthman, when they were trying to finish him off. They struck her, she put her hand and her hand, her, the fingers were cut off. These fingers, plus the bloody shirt of Uthman, or bloody whatever he was wearing of Uthman, she sent it to her brother Muawiyah in Sham. So Muawiyah is bashing Amir al-Mu'mineen. He is showing these things to get the emotions going of the people as well. And he also has some false witnesses of some of the companions of the Prophet to come and bear witness that Ali ibn Abi Talib is the one who killed Uthman. It's not fair to Ali. Ali is helping, and this is what he gets in return. Now here also there's a point I want to make on the side. When Uthman asks for Ali ibn Abi Talib's help, what does Ali do? In the second Saqifa, Ali ibn Abi Talib was not happy with Uthman. Stuff was said back and forth between him, Abdurrahman bin Auf, and all of these people. They didn't like each other that much. But here, Amir al-Mu'mineen, when Uthman asks for help, because he's looking at the long-term goals of Islam, and he's looking at the bigger picture, what does he do? He helps. But this was the chance that Imam Ali could have wanted to get back at Uthman and others. Yeah? To not help him out so that he can take the reins of power or whatever. But he helps. And he tries his best. There's a lesson in it for us, brothers and sisters, today. That yes, we have problems with some of the enemies of the Shia, some of the enemies of the Ahlul Bayt, all of that. We have problems, we have issues, but we don't let these emotions get in the way of how we act. When our maraji' are telling us, or most of them are telling us, be careful, now's not the time, look at the greater cause, look at the bigger picture, you still have people out there, no matter how much you try to explain that, come on, the enemies of Allah, the enemies of Yazid, all of them, they're all dead anyway. They're still trying to make sure that they're dead even more, and doing whatever they can to make sure that they're dead in their graves, but they're causing the death of Shia here and there, and when you tell them, they say, no, these Shia are shaheed. We have to do what we have to do. But the maraji' are telling us, why do we even have maraji' to begin with? Why do we have maraji' to begin with? That when it comes to times like these, they're able to tell us what Ahlul Bayt want from us. He spent 60 years of his life in the school of Ahlul Bayt. And he knows what Ahlul Bayt want in certain situations. They're telling us, be careful now. But still people go the other way because of their emotions. Have to be careful. These are good emotions. It's good. But we have to be careful. Very careful. This is what they're capitalizing on today. Very easy. Stories. There are stories out there of how before beheading us, they will play certain videos. And then we'll get their people hyped up to kill us. Would you like it if someone spoke ill of Fatima to Zahra alayhi salam? We won't accept that. We won't tolerate that. Well, same thing for them. Other people are like that. They revere other figures. Our maraji are telling us to be very careful. Ali ibn Abi Talib, left and right, you see him working with the same people that he had problems with. Inshallah, we keep that in mind. Recite salawat. Tell the marja that for 364 days, I will follow you. But there is one day that I will not follow you. I will follow my heart, my love. And that's not where I will follow you. As a matter of fact, that's the one day that you have to make sure you follow. Because this marja is the representative of the imam. If you're not listening to the rep, then the imam of the time, does he feel that you're ready to come? We're sitting here today. I'm sorry I'm going on about this, but I have to. We're sitting here today saying that, wow, what a stupid people they were back then. That they went against Imam Hussein. How clear was it? How easy is it to understand that you're not supposed to do that? Well, the people of then, their test was like that. Don't think it was that easy for them to understand back then. That same test for us today, if we're not listening to those who we're supposed to be listening to, it'll be up to par with that. Because our understanding now has developed more. We have done research over 1400 years. Now we know how crazy it was what they did. I'm sorry to use this language. But the people today, some of them, they don't understand this. 50 years down the road, let me tell you this. 50 years down the road, people will come and they will say, how could the people of 2015 do what they did? Didn't they understand? Wasn't it clear? That such and such marja said, be careful. Such and such marja said, be careful. 1, 2, 3, 4, 10 of them, 20 of them, they're saying, be careful. How, it was clear and obvious. Today we don't have that many marja. Oh, we wish we had it. The same way today we're saying, oh, wish we were with Hussein. You get what I'm saying? Don't think the tests are always going to be the same. Yeah? Even in school, they won't give the same test to kids that they gave to a previous batch of kids the day before, because they know all the questions have been transmitted. Right? If we want to grow, if Allah wants us to grow, He will give us new tests. It's very clear. I don't know where the problem is. I really don't understand. I try my best to understand the reasoning. I can't. Of how I could say this. That 364 days I will listen to you. 365th day I will not. Okay. Muawiyah sees that if he leaves Uthman, a dead Uthman now is to his benefit more than a live Uthman. Till here, a live Uthman was helpful. Here onwards, a dead Uthman is better. I'm going to shift the Khilafah for Bani Umayyah to, excuse me, from Bani Umayyah to Bani Sufyan. No help is sent for Uthman. Uthman is sending letters, pleading. No help is sent. Uthman is killed. And Amir al-Mu'minin is made Khalifa. Okay. Let's fast forward now. All the stuff that happened in between, all the things that Imam Ali did that got on people's nerves. All of those things we're not going to talk about, because we're not talking about Amir al-Mu'minin's history here. We're talking about Bani Umayyah history. I want to go over Jamal too. I don't want to do Jamal. I just want to put it behind us. There's a couple points that have to do with Bani Umayyah and a contribution to Ashura that I will talk about. But that's about it about Jamal. We have to go to Safin, inshallah. And that's where the real deal is. Safin. In Jamal, we have a couple points. Number one, if Muawiyah now sees that Uthman is gone, and power is just, you know, it's there, but it's in Amir al-Mu'mineen's hand, he's upset. He's upset because it wasn't supposed to happen like this. Who thought that the people are going to pick Amir al-Mu'mineen after they take care of business with Uthman? Who thought? As a matter of fact, they say Aisha, who had problems with Uthman, and this is very clear, she had problems with Uthman. After Uthman is killed, and she was coming back from Mecca to Medina, she hears that Uthman has been killed. She says, okay, who took his place? They say Ali. She was either wishing Talha or Zubair maybe, because Talha is from her tribe, Bani Taim. Zubair is married to her sister. You know, there's somewhat of a relationship here. So maybe one of them, Ali ibn Abi Talib, take me back to Mecca. Why was Uthman killed? But before this, you were angry at Uthman. Now us, the Shia school, says that she would even encourage the killing of Uthman. Kill this guy. Who is this guy? Ahlul Sunnah, the moderate ones, will tell you, no. We don't believe in that much. We say that she was against him. She was speaking against him. And very critical of him, but she never said kill him. And then you have the very extreme Wahhabis that just say everyone was in love always. The Sahaba and the Ummahatul Mu'mineen, everyone was in love with each other and there was no problem at all. Okay, you'll always have that. Alright, so she says, take me back to Mecca. And then she goes in Hijr Ismail, she puts a tent there and she says, oh, why did they kill Uthman and all of that, and we have to do something about this. Ali ibn Abi Talib is responsible and all of that. Okay, so no one thought that Ali is going to take the place, but the people just put him there. So now we're stuck again with a dilemma. This tree that has sprouted now is coming out. Boom, it hits his head. It hits his head against a rock, which is called Amir al-Mu'mineen, alayhi salam. He's stepping there. This khilafah was supposed to transfer from Bani Umayyah to Bani Sufyan. What happened? You have that huge barrier. Amir al-Mu'mineen is there standing. So what do we do now? We can't do anything. Why? Because Muawiyah is a nobody. He's still a nobody. He has somewhat of a power, but he's a nobody compared to this Sahabi, this great Sahabi by the name of Ali ibn Abi Talib. He's nothing. But what did Jamal do? The Battle of Jamal, what did it do? It opened the way for you to be against the Khalifa of your time. Before this, there was no such a thing of a Sahabi being in the, standing in the face of another Sahabi like this that has become Khalifa. But now you have Talha, Zubair, Aisha standing up against Amir al-Mu'mineen and an all-out war. You can't even call it a battle anymore, a war, because thousands upon thousands are killed. Some are tortured. Before the Battle of Jamal began in Basra, that Imam, some of those who Imam Ali had appointed as treasurers of Basra, as governors of Basra. So now the ice is broken. There's a crack in the sanctity of the Khilafah. Before it wasn't like this. Yes, with Uthman, normal people came and revolted and all of that. But here you have huge Sahabis versus huge Sahabis. All of them going against each other. Ammar bin Yasir on one side, Talha Zubair on this side. Whose fault was all of this though? In a way, you could say, it's all Abdullah bin Zubair's fault. We're going back to Adalat al-Sahaba once again. A person by the name of Abdullah bin Zubair, who is he? We're going to be talking, we might, if we get there, talk about him too in the future, because he has some dialogues with Imam Hussein. He's a person that was like 10, 12, not 12 even, 10, 9, 8 years old when the Prophet passed away. Sahabi. Okay. My ears are ringing from that word. Alright. Who is he? What did he do? They say when Aisha was on her camel coming from Mecca out, going towards the Basra, or maybe from there to where the Battle of Jamal was supposed to take place, I don't remember. She passes by a place that I also had forgotten the name of, but it came, Haw'ab it was called, if I remember correctly, Haw'ab. And there are dogs barking there. And she says, what's the name of this place? They say, Haw'ab. She says, oh my God, the Prophet had warned me. The Prophet had warned me of a day that I will be passing in a place called Haw'ab and the barking dogs. And he said, whenever you go and that happens, you better make your way back, because you are not on the true path. You're on the wrong path. And as a matter of fact, once again, moderate Sunni scholars will say that she did tawbah. That means she acknowledged the mistake she made. Right? Later. Now, whether it's accepted or not, that's another story. We don't know. That depends. Every school has their own understanding here. But she did tawbah. Of course, the extreme ones, they'll say everyone was in love. So, she says, take me back to Medina. The Prophet had warned me. Right here, I want to say something. That it doesn't matter if the Prophet had told you. You should understand that you can't go against a great Sahabi like this. One of the 10 granted paradise and all of those things that we hear about the Sahaba. A Khalifa. A Khalifa. It doesn't matter. The Prophet didn't have to tell you that you have to pass through a place with barking dogs and that particular. No, he didn't have to tell you that. Didn't the Quran say, وَقَرْنَا فِي بُيُوتِكُنَّ Stay in your homes. Don't come out of your homes. O Ummahatul Mu'mineen. Didn't the Quran say that? Was that command only before the Prophet passed away? So they want to take her back. There's one person here very pivotal, and that's Abdullah bin Zubair. He is the nephew of Aisha, because her sister is married to his dad. Her name was Asma, if I remember correctly, yes. So he tells her, "No, auntie, this is not Hawab." And he gets a few people to come. They swear, he bears witness, testifies, "This is not Hawab," and convinces her. And after that, she continues on her way, all the way until the Battle of Jamal takes place, and that ice is broken. Thousands of people are killed. Now Muawiyah can use this as an excuse. Now that you can fight a Khalifa, a rightly guided Caliph, Muawiyah's turn comes that we will inshallah cover in future nights. Recite a salawat. And if we can move forward a little bit too, please. Recite another salawat. As-salamu alayka ya Aba Abdullah. We have slowly, slowly moved into the Ahlul Bayt. With the Ahlul Bayt, I feel that sometimes the companions of Imam Hussein would be more than happy that if we weep a little bit more for them. They gave whatever they had so that the Ahlul Bayt didn't have to go to the battlefield. But they eventually were all killed. The Ahlul Bayt had to go. Who's the first that has to go? Once the Ashab of Imam Hussein have all been slaughtered, now another sacrifice has to be made. From the Ahlul Bayt, there's no one else left. So is Hussein a person to send others to protect him from his own family? The Ashab of Imam Hussein, they said, "We're not going to let anyone else go, we're going to go." But when the time comes for Imam Hussein and the Ahlul Bayt, he says, "The first to go, Ali and Akbar, go." Ali comes to him and wants permission. He says, "Go, don't even ask, go. Go." I want to say something that you'll understand in the end of our musibah. And that is, those of you who have been to Karbala, you will find that close to Imam Hussein's grave and the camp of Imam Hussein, the Mukhayyam, you will find that, okay, this is where they say Ali ibn al-Asghar was shot. Abbas isn't that far away either. All of these people, they're close by. Habib is close, buried close. But there's one place that is far away. And that's where they say Ali ibn al-Akbar fell. Let's keep that in mind as we go on. They say Ali ibn al-Akbar is ashbahun nas khalqan wa khulqan bi Rasulillah. I want to make a point here. Ali ibn al-Akbar is very, very similar in appearance, in demeanor. Everything about him is like the Prophet. Now I want to make a point here. The Prophet and Fatima to Zahra, they say there was a great resemblance between them, these two. So you can say Imam Hussein, when he looks at Ali, when he looks at Ali walking in the tent, when he looks at Ali speaking, when he looks at the lips of Ali, when he looks at the eyes of Ali, it's as if he's seeing his mother Fatima. If I ever longed for my mother Fatima that I loved so much, that I lost at a young age, that my father, when she finished doing ghusl on her, he said, "Come, tazawwadu min ummikum, come and get a last glance at your mother." I was one of the first to run. I ran before Zainab actually. And I put my face on the body of my mother. Alhamdulillah, Allah has given me Ali. Whenever I miss my mother, I can look at him, remember my mother. But now the time has come. Ali, go, don't even ask, go, go. But if you want to know how hurt Hussein was when Ali was going, he looked to the sky when Ali started going and his back was toward his father. He said, "Oh Allah, bear witness who I am sending." He held on to his beard. He's under pressure. Hussein is under pressure. The women and children had surrounded him before. Ali is the only mahram left after Abbas that they want. He's an adult. He's big. When he's there, they're confident. He intimidates the enemy. "I am leaving. The girls, the boys, the women, they all come around. And where is he going? Ali, don't go, don't go." Ali goes, Hussein looks to the sky. Ali goes and fights hardly. Destroys the enemy, but he comes back. He has sustained many little wounds. They say little wounds hurt more than great wounds. Why? It's those little wounds that make you thirstier. As blood is leaving slowly and slowly, you get this intensive thirst and dry mouth. He comes back and he says to his father, Ya Abata, Al-Atashu Qad Qatalani. Thirst is killing me, father. Ali, don't you know that your father is thirstier than you? وَثِقْلُ الْحَدِيدِ أَجْهَدَنِي. The weight of the iron, the weight of the armor has taken away all my energy. Hussein says, go back to the battlefield. You will be quenched soon by your grandfather. The musibah of Ali is very hard, brothers and sisters. I don't know if I can do justice or not. Ali goes back to the battlefield. He begins to fight until they eventually hit him in the head. Blood comes out from his head, they say, onto the eyes of this horse. This horse had been trained to bring his master back when he's in trouble to the camp. This horse's eyes are covered in blood. He doesn't know which way he's going. He goes into the camp of the enemy more. Thousands of soldiers opening the way for Ali and Al-Akbar. Let him in. Let him in. Let him far. Go far from Hussein. He gets farther and farther. He's knocked unconscious, holding on to the neck of the horse. The horse goes more and more until they drop him from the horse. And that's when they attack from every angle. فَقَطَّعُوا وَبِسُيُوفِهِمْ إِرْبَادٍ إِرْبَادٍ. They cut Ali to pieces. Nothing is left of Ali. يا أبتا عليك من السلام. Zainab runs from the tents all the way to Akbar. Abbas, run after Zainab. Don't let her go alone. Lady Zainab is a god, is amongst the enemy. Abbas, Hussein are around the body of Akbar. Abbas, take Zainab back to the tents. I'll take care of my Ali. Brothers and sisters, it is one thing to lose a loved one, but it's good if people come and sympathize with you. They say Hussein put his face on the face of Akbar, while the enemy is clapping and cheering and mocking. They are happy. Hussein, look what we did to your beloved son. Hussein puts his face on the face of Akbar so long, they thought that even Hussein's soul had departed. O Bani Hashim, come and help me. Take the body of my Akbar back to the tent. My Ali is all in pieces. Bring something so that we can put his pieces into and carry him back. Allah knows that I cannot do this alone. لا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم. وسيعلم الذين ظلموا
أيام قلب ينقلبون. نسألك اللهم وندعوك باسمك العظيم الأعظم العز الأجل الأكرم بفاطمة وأبيها وبعلها وبنيها والسر المستودع فيها يا الله 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 يا رحمن يا رحيم يا مقلب القلوب ثبت قلوبنا على دينك. صلوا على محمد وآل محمد.
Ya Hussein, Ya Hussein, let's continue.